Well, the sound that you can hear behind you is the water coming into the mill at Claybrook Mill in near Lutterworth in Leicestershire. And I'm standing with Miller Spencer, the miller at Claybrook Mill. Spencer, this sound, how long have people been using this water at this site?
Well, the mill has been in existence for over 1,000 years, and the location we're at the moment is currently very close to the centre, well, the Roman centre of England, up at High Cross here. So the mill has been here for, like I say, over 1,000 years, mentioned in the Domesday Book. It's been milling consistently since then, up to 76, I think it was, when the mill finally fell into disrepair and stopped milling. At that point, it was just milling animal feeds. And then the previous miller, David Mountford, then bought the property and spent 10 years, I believe it was, restoring the mill into its current condition. And that's when he started to mill again. So the mill has been in consistent operation since it was made, and has only had like a 10-year rest period, if you like.
So we're standing literally by these enormous cogs, is the way I would describe them, under here. What happens in this room?
Well, this is what we know, well, we refer to as the gear room, because it's full of gears. And this is really the powerhouse of the mill. The other side of the brick wall there is the water wheel, which is the water. It's an overshot water wheel, which the water is introduced onto it to power the process. You're driving a horizontal shaft, which has got the pit gear on it, which is the big gear we can see at the background there. And then that's driving what's known as the wallower. A lot of the things in the mill are given fantastic names. I have no idea of the origin of that name, but that's what it's known as.
So which bit is can we see the wallower from here?
Well, the wallower is the first gear which turns the drive
really
from horizontal to vertical. It's the one just below
the big. See what you mean. Yes, it is, and it almost looks like the mill wheel itself, like a metal version. It's huge.
Yes, it's very large. Then we've got the great spur gear, which is what drives the wooden stone nuts, which is what drives the millstones.
So how often does this get fired up?
We're milling every day.
Right.
And we will mill, depending upon water levels and depending upon the mood of the mill, because it does have moods, we can have an output of either one 25-kilo sack or up to 12 25-kilo sacks, depending, like I say, on water levels and how in tune the mill is with nature.
So you do depend on rainfall for this to work, though?
Absolutely. The water is the lifeblood of the mill. There is no other source of power. If there's no water, we can't mill.
So do you have a gate at the top there to control it?
The waterways around the mill are controlled by 3 sluice gates. We have a main level control sluice gate, which is controlling the level of water in the lead. There's an emergency sluice gate, which sometimes when we get too much water, we can't get rid of it quick enough, so we have to open that one. And the third sluice gate is about half a mile upstream, which is where the leat is split from the brook.
So if I'm coming through here, how many... is it upstairs that it all goes... we'll go upstairs, but in essence, from this point, it's exactly the same as a windmill.
Well, yeah, the watermillers refer to windmills as upside down is, because the power in a watermill is coming in at the bottom and then going up. In a windmill, the power is coming at the top and going down. Once you've got the power into the vertical sort of shaft, that's where the differences between a watermill and a windmill stop.
So which came first, the watermill or the windmill?
The watermill, obviously.
I just had to ask. You're chuckling away there, Spencer. So, right, we'll go up. Oh,
just watch the steps.
Very
steep and narrow.
Yeah, steep and narrow steps here. So this building here. Oh, look.
So we're just
It's very beautiful. All this wood is absolutely gorgeous. It's all worn in, these beams and poles and...
Well, there's a bit of a story about some of the beams, which have only come to light. There's one of the things... I've been milling for 10 years, and every time we get people coming around the mill and having a look, we learn something new about the building, milling, the process of making bread, etc., etc. It's a fascinating subject, and we're always learning about it. And one of the recent things about the beams was that they're huge, great chunks of oak.
You can see that. I mean, they look like they're almost... You look... Having been in a ship recently, I was on a 32-metre brigantine that was sort of a 16th century sort of almost tea clipper kind of thing. This is the sort of thing from the sort of shipbuilding. I'm looking at it thinking ships.
And you've hit the nail right on the head. Because a lot of these beams, you can see they've got like a chamfering edge to them.
Yeah.
And they've got various notches and marks and things on them which just have no explanation.
They don't add up.
In this building, especially on some of the beams downstairs, there's the chamfering, and then it's you can quite clearly see rope marks on the wood. And it was only, it was literally a few months ago, we had some people come over to have a look at the mill. And one of them professes to be an expert in some of the old sort of ships and how they were built, etc. He took one look at the beams and said, what you've got here is a piece of history, because these beams have been used in the very old man-of-war ships.
Do you know, that was my instant reaction when I walked in, but that's only because I was in Grenada on this 32-metre brigantine on the Trezombre, which is now called a fair transport ship, and it sails this chocolate, the Grenadian chocolate, back across. It's on the Atlantic at the moment, but literally my moment I walked in, I could see it was like I was put on a ship.
Exactly. And the beam downstairs has got a big split in it, and they said that's probably the reason why that mast was removed from the ship, because it split. So this notion of recycling being a new fad, I'm afraid, is centuries old.
I can see. I've got to be honest with you, Spencer. It's so beautiful. It's very peaceful. And there's a beauty in the equipment, in the way that it's got... It's used, but it's incredibly clean up here as well. It's absolutely clean as a whistle.
Well, it's one of the things that you have to be careful with milling, is that it does create a lot of flour dust. And it's one of the things which has contributed to the demise of a lot of mills, is explosions. When we're milling and the stones are whirring round, they turn at around about 100 RPM. Mm-hmm. And these are French burr stones, so they're the finest quality milling stones you can get. If the stones ever touch, you get what's in essence, it's like St. Elmo's fire going around the stones. You get a series of sparks and you get this continuous kind of flame. So if you can imagine that you've got your grain coming in and producing the flour, you've got a tremendous amount of dust in there, and if the stones ever touch and get one spark, you have yourself a nice big explosion.
Do you not worry? Do you worry? And is your insurance sky high?
No, we don't worry, because we make sure we don't run out of grain. That's the usual reason why you tend to get explosions, is if you've run out of grain. Which also brings us on to another sort of use of flour, and part of this is supposed history to the mill, is that flour is used, because of its explosive nature, was one of the main ingredients for gunpowder.
No, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Exploding powder.
Well, any powder will, in the right conditions, explode, but flour is renowned for it. But if we look on the back wall, you've got some of the nameplates of the previous millers. And on the top one there, you might see one that's M. Fawkes.
Yes. Yeah, I can see it. It's
ever
right
heard
there.
Of Guy Fawkes?
Once or twice. What particular type of year? Yeah.
Guy Fawkes and his crew plotted their demise of Parliament half a mile down the road.
Yes, I know. I've been
here.
In a church where that we've just... Yes.
So it's a bit of a myth, a legend, a rumour, call it what you like, that the flour that made the gunpowder for the gunpowder plot may have come from this mill.
Well, that makes sense. Good grief.
Whatever, it's a good little yarn to spin.
It is.
So it's... one of the great things about mills, they all have a story to tell. They're all steeped in history because they've been here for so long.
Yeah, I mean, you can feel the history in the room. I mean, it's got the most amazing atmosphere in here. It really feels there's a peacefulness in here. It sounds really strange. And I walk into buildings, I often feel the way that a building feels. And there is definitely a good ambience in this room.
Yeah, it's quite peaceful. It's a total different kettle of fish when she's up and running, which I'll get her going for you, and you can you'll be able to see that the building actually comes alive and starts to speak to you.
Excellent. Does the floor shake?
Oh yes.
Oh good. So before you do that, just let me ask quickly. You different grains. I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm going to ask you a question. I don't think that wheat is English, and I'm guessing that because last year the wheat crop wasn't very good. That doesn't look as shriven as the English wheat from last year. What is that?
That is English wheat.
Is it? Really?
Yes.
That looks really good quality. Let me have a little... do you know what variety it is?
That is Paragon.
Paragon.
If you just stick your nose in... You
can it smells almost like honey.
Sweet.
Mead, it's honey.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Now that takes me straight back to my childhood.
That has a fantastic aroma to it. The problem with growing wheat is that we need water and sunshine at the right times.
In the right order.
And in the right order and the right quantities. We've been fortunate that the farmer who's grown this wheat in Leamington Spa just seemed to be at the right time, in the right area, to be able to produce a good quality wheat. It's pure luck. Farming, there is no accurate science to farming. It's a very difficult game to play. It's very unpredictable, and you are at the mercy of the elements. Some years you'll get a good crop, some years you won't, and this is the nature of it all.
So is this an organic wheat?
This is an organic wheat, yes, which makes it even more special.
And Leamington Spa, it really isn't very far away, is it?
No, and it's quite nice to actually be able to work with a local farmer because they are quite keen to go back to growing some of the more traditional varieties of wheat, which have particular qualities which suit the stone grinding process better than the roller milling process.
Right, that's very, very interesting. And so do you actually analyse the gluten content in these? Do you have it analysed or do you just go with it?
When I'm purchasing an amount of wheat, because we buy 10 tonnes at a time, mm-hmm. and obviously I've got to make my decisions based on the properties of that wheat, so it will be tested for its gluten content, its gluten strength, the protein content and its strength, and also the white flour content of each grain as well, which is also quite important.
So do you also then, when you're making this, do you send the bran off to be animal feed, or what do you do with the leftovers?
If you're making wholemeal, it's what you've got in your hand there gets turned into flour and ends up in a sack.
All right, wholemeal okay.
flour.
Yeah, of course.
So there is no byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
If you are making white flour or brown flour, then yes, you get byproducts such as bran and semolina.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do with that?
They all go off for animal feeds.
Right. Right. Yeah, I was going to say, horses like the brand, don't they?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, no, I've fed that to my horses before. That's fantastic. I'll just put this back in here. I don't want any mice getting hold of that. And then, wow, I'm totally impressed with this. And the room, I mean, the room's pretty big. So where this is where this feeds...
Basically, what we've got here
is... The storage is upstairs, isn't it?
We are now stood above the gear room. So above our head is a big storage bin with approximately about 6 tonnes of wheat in there at the moment, which is above your head. This then flows down through the chutes into a hopper above the stones. And this hopper enables us to add or remove wheat if we need to. It's just most arrangements of milling stones will have some form of hopper on them, which you can either throw with a sack of grain in, or some mills will have some arrangement of chutes or things from storage bins above. So basically, once the wheat is in the hopper, it then flows down into what we call the shoe, which vibrates from side to side, and this is done by something that is known as the damsel. Again, another sort of wonderful name of a
the
piece
damsel.
Of milling. Called the damsel because it chatters away all day long.
Very good. I like that.
And the shoe and the hopper is all held in place by what we call the horse, which forms part of the stone furniture. which is all about sort of holding the necessary apparatus in place to feed the grain into the eye of the stone.
Fantastic. Do you reckon we could get it fired up?
I'll go and shove a stack underneath the outlet and I'll crank it up for you.
Thank you. Shall I stay here and just listen?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, okay. So you're turning a big wheel here, so that's a big green wheel.
Yes, this is our ignition switch, which is basically going to lift the sluice gate, which introduces the water onto the water wheel. So what we should hear in a minute is the sound of rushing water. Which is just starting now.
Oh, that water's really rushing through. You can hear the volume's ramped right up. And that's a fact. Yeah, we've gone from a trickle to a roar.
And what should happen is you'll see this central shaft start to rotate.
Oh, yes, it is.
And it'll start to get noisy.
That's amazing. And it happened so quickly. I mean, literally, it wouldn't take very long at all. We're talking seconds.
So now you can feel that the building is moving. The mill has come alive.
It's like there's a pulse in the room. Yeah, see what you mean by it being alive?
And we have now awakened the beast, so to speak.
How many hours a day does this go?
With the amount of water we've got at the moment, we'll probably be able to mill for a couple of hours before we run out of water.
So, for anybody who wants to get their flour from you and make their local loaf, so if we're in Northamptonshire or Leicestershire or sort of on the borders of Coventry, this is as local as your flour can get, really, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, we open our doors for doorstep sales now on a Tuesday and a Thursday morning now.
And there's a website.
And there's also a website you can find us on as well, yes.
And that's Clayton?
It's www.claybrookmill.co.uk.
Okay, and you also do the farmers markets. Which ones do you do? Where can we find you?
The farmers markets we're doing at the moment are Burbage, Loughborough and Market Bosworth.
Great. And we'll have a look out there. I'm going to say thank you ever so much for showing me around. I'm going to take some of your flour and I'm going to combine it with a local beer and make it a local loaf, because I'm really excited about it, especially knowing that the farmer is just a few miles away.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it all. Keeping it local, keeping it fresh and keeping it top quality.
I love it. And it's zero carbon as well.
Don't get any better.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Spencer. I really appreciate it.